Welcome back to the Barrel Project. If you were listening to 95, this is episode 96, part 2 with Doug Denton talking. In this episode, after we had some technical difficulties, this is all about the Baribeau weight system from Hoyt and the new Axia foam core limbs. Enjoy this episode of the Baribeau Project. Thank you once again.
Robbie, you scared about that score I showed you?
Oh, yeah.
Let's hear it, Demmer.
What did you shoot, John?
Good.
Yeah?
Good. Yeah. I was shooting at XD, and probably my average practice score with the XD was pushing what my Epic was a few years ago. That's why I was super excited with the XD. But my practice range for the Epic when I shot was at the quarry, and I had like the perfect flat landing zone. I just drive up like a quarter mile above the quarry, and I had trees on both sides, so it could be like 90 degrees and sunny. It didn't matter the way the trees grew. I had shade the whole time, and I had a perfect lane cut, so it was like absolutely perfect conditions. It could be 20 mile an hour wind, I'm in 8 in that tunnel. If it was 10 mile an hour wind, I had no wind in that tunnel. And there was a month and a half where I probably averaged close to a 680 with that Epic. If there was world records and stuff going on there, I would have shot a lot more tournaments. That XD, I was pushing right around that the last month. Like, keep in mind, I'm not in an optimal area to shoot high scores because I'm shooting uphill a little bit, and then it's kind of like side hill a little. But I was starting to push around that 678, 677 mark on average.
Yeah.
With a lot of 680s. And I shot a 682 this morning. Well, late morning.
Nice. With the GMX?
Yeah, with the GMX. Yep.
Nice.
First score. First score with it. But in all fairness, the first score I did shoot with the 27 was a 679. Yeah. But that's usually what happens. Like, I'll shoot something good, and then the next two, you know, next two or three is the one that really dictates where it's got to go. And that's like, I shot the first one, it was really good. And then the next kind of three practice sessions was like really bad. And that's where I knew I was on like a border tune, where I set it up the same weight as my XD on the fingers. And that's where I figured out that I needed like a half a spine weaker with that 27. And that's why I reached out to you. I said, I think I need a half a spine weaker with that riser, and I wanted to make sure. That's where it was at.
Cool.
Good stuff. Nice shooting, John.
Not bad for an Olympic riser.
It's meh.
Oh, I was just gonna say, there's another hashtag I was gonna throw out there, but we'll wait and do that off camera. What's that?
Just another cookie cutter Olympic riser, according to some.
Cookie cutter Olympic riser is right. So I apologize for the little mix up. We are live again. Zoom decided to update, and then my computer had to shut down and restart. And it was, it's the trials and tribulations of live podcast recording. So we are back up. We have two primary things we want to cover. Doug's going to give us the lowdown on the Axia limb. We're going to get into the Baribeau weight. Actually, because we have a specific topic to talk about toward the end, let's just dive into the weight. I have this bad boy sitting in front of me at the moment. Those are the two collars and the actual weight. The true credit goes to John Demmer for the initial idea of this weight. John, you started shooting a disc weight almost what, 2 or 3 years ago?
Hardcore, like two or three years ago. I've shot him in the past, and then Eric came out with weights, so I started shooting his, and then just wanted to go back to the disc because I was having not torque issues, but I wanted to reduce the potential to some grip pressure issues. So to move that, to shift that center of mass, like that pressure button, the pressure point to get the bow to go straight, I had to take my disc and rotate it just a little bit. And that's why, you know, Eric has an offset one. So you can move it just a little bit, but with that bigger disc, I can move it faster and more. So that's why I kind of wanted to go back with that. And the other reason was I started shooting the XI, and there's not as many options with the formula riser. So I had just that one front one and one back one. So I needed something a little bit bigger. So I, you know, went back to the disc weight because of that. And so now with that big, big disc I had, it was like a 40 ouncer. I can move that and shift that a little bit easier with just that one front bushing.
Yep. And then, you know, Doug, I talked to John a little bit. I talked to Doug about what I had done just with some modifications to be able to adjust the weight, in conversation with a friend of mine, Joe Wamsley. Shout out to that guy, because he kind of helped me play around with that back in the day. And then Doug, you know, talked to us like, hey, we're interested in moving forward a little bit with this idea. So let's talk about where the current barebow weight is right now, the weight system.
Well, for sure, we wouldn't have what we have right now if it wasn't for you guys and all the feedback. Because the original barebow weight that I designed for the Exceed, you know, clamped around the riser. And then getting all the feedback of, you know, when you clamp something around the bottom of the riser, it stiffens the riser, it changes the feel. You know, that definitely resonated with me, and I wanted to make sure that one, that when we go do this again, let's make sure that we get it right. And man, I can't thank you guys enough for your allowing me to use, you know, pick your brains and use the technology that you guys had developed with that slotted piece. Frank, if you can hold up that weight again and where it's slotted.
Yeah, let me spotlight the video. So, because we do have quite a few live feed people, I want them to be able to see it. Hold on a second. So here's your
slotted piece. So that slot starts at the center and then migrates obviously to the side there. But that allows you to shift the weight. And John was mentioning just now that he can shift the weight to get the bow to jump straight out of his hand. And that becomes super critical. And one, for me, ethically, I wanted to make sure that, because that's not my idea, that's y'all's idea. I wanted to make sure I got permission from you guys before I did that. And before I even talked to Hoyt about it, because that would have bothered me personally if I took that and said, oh, look what I created, because I didn't. It was you guys. You guys created it. I just helped, you know, put it into the platform that Hoyt we have today. And then I threw in the dampening, internal dampening, because I thought that would be pretty cool to have. And now with the World Archery Rules, we can have that. And then to really close the loop, what Hoyt challenged me with was we need one skew. And the reason skews become important is because we are a global company. And internationally, we sell the majority of our recurve products internationally. And so we have distributors. And with those distributors, they want to have as few a number of SKUs as possible. And so I was challenged with, let's make three weights into one package. And man, when I was actually done with the project, I had these three different size weights designed. It was all done. And then it was like, yeah, we're not selling that because we need one package. And I'm like, well, crap. So I went to the drawing board and I wasn't even sure what I was going to do. And then I was playing with I was home that same day and I was opening a jar of pickles and I twisted open the jar and it just happened to be a can jar, right? So it's someone homemade pickle, dill pickles. And if anyone's ever opened up a mason jar, you know, and you had that ring, and I pulled off that ring, and I'm not sure what the lid they call on a mason jar, but that fell out, and I'm like, dear God, there we go. And
incredible.
You know, inspiration happened with eating some pickles, and but really with you guys, I honestly can't thank you enough for all the support that y'all have given me on this project, and with the GMX 3 series, the weight, all of it. I mean, even the Vertitune plates that we have, Barebow specific Vertitune plates that don't have the clicker extension. I wouldn't have that if I didn't have you guys to talk to and bounce ideas off of.
Oh, man. John, should I tell them what we use the regular clicker plate for with the disc weight before, so he doesn't get too excited? Just so you know, we actually use the regular clicker plate because it helps. This thing acts as a bow stand as well.
Yeah,
the clicker plate on the front keeps the bow out of the mud.
Well, good luck, or good thing is that the bows still come with all those. And the what we're referring to as the Barebow Vertitune plates are sold separately, so it's all is good there, man.
Yeah, no, I know there was a lot of talk about that, and a lot of people had asked about it. But it was just something that we found when we were using the disc weight. It's like a tripod, and you set that thing down, it doesn't go anywhere. It's great. That's why they're all beat up on the end. It's not because of the clickers. So, and then you talked about it. I don't think we talked about it on live feed. The live feed's definitely built back up. Can you go into some detail about the technology behind the dampening system? Because to my knowledge, and if you guys know something different, let me know. Is there another Barebow weight out there that has any dampening to it that anybody knows of? So off the top of my head, I can't.
There's some that have some internal powder.
Okay. Ramrod powder tungsten.
Oh, okay.
And that's been around for a while. At least a few years.
Yeah. It's in 4 ounce stacks. I don't believe they're sold in more than 4 ounce stacks.
Okay.
Yeah. So Ramrod has some patented technology, but it has to do around the density of the material. So fundamentally it's using a tungsten powder. And when vibrations hit that, it excites it, and then has that tungsten powder moves, it reduces vibration. What we have in the in our Hoyt Barebow weight is microspheres. So microspheres, if you was to pour it out on the floor, on a table, it actually flows like water, but it's actually glass balls, like spheres, you know, so they're hollow glass balls. And it looks almost like sand. When you hold it in your hand, it's very lightweight, which is really good for dampening because you want to have something that moves and actually absorbs vibration. You want it to be lightweight because then it will excite, and all of those microspheres are bouncing around and absorbs the vibration, and that's really the key. That's how it works. That it's able to excite and it's light mass, so it gets that energy and then dissipates it. Every time it hits the wall, the internal walls of that weight, it's dampening vibration. And so it might not sound like a lot, but technically with how we measure vibration, so we have a sound room, we have accelerometers that we put on all of our equipment, and we can truly finitely measure what vibration we have going through a system, in this case being the Barebow with the GMX3 and axial amps and the Barebow weight, it reduces the vibration by 13%. Not a ton amount there, but what does matter is that's 13% of that vibration is not going back into your body. And over the course of a shooting and an event, vibration, you know, kills, you know, endurance and, you know, our muscles, and we might not feel it, but it, yeah, I promise you, it has an effect.
So this is a weird question. I don't know if you have the stats. Can you tell what the difference in dampening from the Epic to the GMX is? Do you know the difference between the two?
Yeah, I didn't set them up apples to apples in comparison, and meaning like the raw riser and a raw riser to see what the difference is. But I do know that from the Formula XI, from the XD, because we have that internal dampening, I did compare those two. Okay. And I can't necessarily share those numbers, but it was significant enough that what we called our 360 degree dampener in the pockets was like a thumbs up, got to go do that. So, and that's why we put it into the GMX 3 series as well.
And anybody that's shooting with an injury should really appreciate that aspect. Because anytime we can reduce that shot going back into our hand, even if we're not grabbing the bow, it still has that connection. It's still going to come back. Yep. It's definitely a positive for sure.
The thing. I think a lot of the young archers, because when we're young, we're 10 foot tall and bulletproof in some aspects, but everything matters. And as we tweak the equipment in, and as archers get, you know, better at shooting higher scores, and everything's getting more technical, eliminating variables such as vibration going into your body, even if it's only at 13% for that particular variable weight, all of it matters now, because you don't want to leave anything on you know, out there, you know, to chance, especially if you have equipment and the ability to measure and how, you know, ways to address it. So yeah, reducing that vibration going into our bodies, I think, is really, really, really critical.
And to kind of give a case in point with that, I separated my shoulder several years ago, and it took a long time for that to come back, where I wasn't shooting in pain. And I shot a stiff riser back then, and shot it pretty good, but when I was hurt, I literally could only shoot 3 arrows before I had to reach up, grab my arm, and bring it down with the other hand, because it hurt so bad to put any kind of pressure back in. It was fine lifting it up, but as soon as I let go of that arrow, it just like shocked the system and it hurt so bad. Where I went back an hour and did the same thing, 3 arrows, third arrow was done, toast. Went back another hour and I grabbed a riser that I knew was softer in the hand. Call it whatever you want, but it was softer in hand. It was less vibey. I shot that bow and I can shoot it all day. No problem. Even with when I was injured. And it's just that it might've been, who knows, 10, 15% less vibration, but it was that threshold that kept me from not shooting at all to shooting, you know, pretty much all day.
Yeah. And that's the thing, you know, we earlier, before the podcast got, you know, disconnected, we were talking about how I engineer a bow to flex. I didn't tell the world, you know, how much I wanted to flex, because a lot of people, I think that you don't want one. It's a piece of, you know, aluminum, this machine is not really moving. Everything moves, everything flexes, but I have a certain amount of flex that I want to have. And it's, and some engineers consider it to be too much. But I have found that you need to have a certain amount of flex to allow the bow to be more forgiving, softer feeling, absorb some of that vibration that you're talking about. If you have a riser that's too stiff, man, it will tear you up, just like your example you gave us.
Perfect. Everyone, the weight comes with three collars, really. You have your 30-ounce, your 40-ounce collar, and they just screw on to the disc weight. I'll do a video with the new 27-inch GMX and put that on the YouTube page. Anything else you want to talk about with the weight at the moment?
I do have a brass washer that's coming. So you're going to have a stainless steel washer and a brass washer. I put the brass washer in there so it doesn't mar the surface of the weight. Because I know if you crank it down, so the first prototype that I had, I cranked it down and it would obviously, you know, make some indentation into the stainless steel. So I'm recommending using the stainless steel against the head of the boat, and then the brass washer that's actually contacting the weight, which is a little bit softer material. And that way it doesn't necessarily mar as bad the weight when you're cranking it down on your bows.
Good stuff. Good stuff. So with that being said, moving on to sort of part three of the conversation, let's talk about the new limbs. Let's get into the technology there, and also maybe some trials and tribulations that go along with being a manufacturer.
Oh, sounds good. So, you know, syntactic foam was patented by Hoyt. My goodness, I believe in 1985, maybe. It's, I might have that date wrong, but it is, the syntactic foam was originally engineered for the aerospace, NASA, submarines, actually, back in the mid to late 80s. And then there was a engineer that worked for Easton that was an R&D engineer. Gary Felice was his name. And he actually perfected the formulation for recurve limb. And that is what we were able to, Hoyt was able to patent for recurve limb. So Hoyt's had syntactic foam for a number of years, obviously back from the mid to late 80s. And then we discontinued that when we introduced the Velos. And then when we introduced the Axia limb with the resin infused core, we found that there was a lot of archers that were still asking about, you know, older syntactic foam limbs. So we started doing some testing. Most notably, Casey Koffel, when she won the Paris World Cup here recently, she was shooting a pre-production prototype version of the syntactic foam. And a shout out to Casey, because she's been, you know, a tremendous help testing the syntactic foam limbs in the Axia platform for us. So we do have some technical papers that we're going to be releasing here in the next couple of weeks that kind of go into all the engineering technical numbers. I'm not necessarily going to go into all of that, but what I can tell you is the syntactic foam core material is 3% lighter mass density than what the resin infused core. What that really means for us as archers is it's faster, it's smoother, and it has less measurable vibration than the Axia resin infused core. But all of that being said, doesn't mean it's a better limb. Both the resin infused and the syntactic core foam limbs are both equally as good. There's not one that I believe that in a lab is going to shoot better than the other. Now, what we will find is archers will like one more than the other. Therefore, they're going to shoot it better. But it's just because of how it reacts and how their arrows tune and how the limbs react to their release. But a lot of cool stuff happening with the syntactic foam. Interestingly enough, I have tested, so many different foam materials that are just readily available out there to purchase. And none of them work even close as good as what our syntactic foam material does. It is made in-house. And it is painful for us to make. And there's a lot of proprietary materials that we had to get. It was kind of a slow going. The reason we didn't have it available when we introduced the Axia resin infused core was because the military had all of the chemicals that we needed to make it tied up. They had it tied up for basically 6 to 8 months. So we kind of had to put a pause on it. We had all the testing done, that we couldn't get the chemicals in-house because the military had it wrapped up. So that's the reason it's a little bit late to the game, call it. But, man, I'm really excited about the performance of this limb and what it really can mean for a lot of the our archers out there.
You talked about lightness and speed. How do the regular wood core and the foam core compare, like, vertically stable and horizontal torsional stability?
Great question. And they're the same. So the vertical stability, the torsional stability, with when I engineer a limb, I'm always looking for the optimum torsional stability. And this is something that has migrated as I engineer limbs, get them out into the market, talk to shooters, and we're always trying to improve. And even if it might be just small incremental improvements, we're still trying to improve the optimum torsional stability. What I can tell you is you can have a limb that is way too torsionally stable. And if you have one that doesn't have any flex at all, it will be unforgiving. If you put it in a shooting machine, it's going to shoot great all day long. But guess what? None of us are shooting machines. And we vary from shot to shot. So we need to have forgiveness. So when I talk about optimum torsional stability, is I'm talking about how that limb flexes. So when we make a bad shot, it's typically on the release. So we put more oscillation into the fingers, more oscillation into the string due to our fingers. And what that means, we got that string moving back and forth and the arrow releases. And you have no idea where the arrow is going to release. But just like our cars, they have shocks. And when you hit a bump, it absorbs that shock. You still feel it, but it's not as if you were in a vehicle that had no shock absorbers. So when you have a bad shot, the limb will actually have some flex at the tip, absorb that oscillation of the string to give a more consistent release of the arrow by the time it gets to brace height. And that is all the engineering of that carbon skin, which has 8 layers of carbon within the axial limbs, to really optimize that torsional stability to give that ultimate forgiveness.
Wonderful. Thanks for all that information, and really got diving into the weeds of, you know, how you developed it and the details that set it apart from previous limbs and obviously limbs of some others that manufacturers out there. I know we had talked a little bit off camera, and you wanted to kind of maybe talk about the elephant in the room in regards to when you have issues with limbs. We've had some stuff happen recently. As a matter of fact, the gentleman is watching the live feed right now, but you and I talked about it. How do you manage that, and what's your response typically when you come across something? You can't manufacture as many items as Hoyt does and not have something go wrong at some point in time.
Yeah, so I believe, you know, John is the one that I saw some photos today of an axial limb that actually delaminated. And John's on this meeting, man, I personally apologize for that, and I hate that happened. First and foremost, that will be covered under warranty. We'll get you a new set out ASAP. But when I see a failure like that, I instantly know what happened. And the only reason I know what happened is because I have done enough testing in all types of conditions to really understand the failure modes that happen within recurve limbs. And I wish I could tell everyone watching the podcast that Hoyt is perfect every single time and we never make mistakes. And, you know, unfortunately, that is not the case. We still have operators and team members that are rolling on glue to different laminates that are engineered and putting them into a press to get a perfect recurve limb. And there are times that we don't get enough glue on the limb, and it is rare. But when I saw the failure that John's limb had, that's 100%, you know, a miss on our part. And I can't apologize enough for that. I know our team members work extremely hard to get the perfect product, because all of them know that the limb that they're making could be used at the next Olympic game, but also could be used at the next club championship, or just the kid that's buying his first recurve bow and shooting his first X. All of that is significant to us. And it's just an unfortunate part of manufacturing that, you know, some misses happen there, not getting enough glue onto each laminate. And that is as transparent as I can possibly be, and definitely apologize for that.
Yeah, it happens. And I think it's, you know, it's ironic that it all came about today. And you know, but in typical Hoyt fashion, you know, you're taking the high road. Oh, and Doug's gone.
Doug's not gone. Doug has this light shining in from his window.
Oh, is that what Doug's doing? Doug got tired of staring into the light. But yeah, it's, we appreciate your candidness and willingness to address it literally on the spot. You know, and it definitely shows a level of professionalism and dedication to the archers, and it's a good thing. I don't see any questions, just a lot of positive comments and appreciation for you, Doug. There was one question you actually talked about it a little bit from Cindy Graham. Her husband was asking about some design process stuff. How do you estimate the fundamental vibration modes of the riser and their interplay with the limb's dynamics? Are you comparing estimates to post-design? So go ahead if you want to.
Yeah, absolutely. So like I mentioned earlier, we have a sound room. We have accelerometers. We measure all the frequencies of vibrations. And so there's several different frequencies that we can measure in all the axes. And then we take that and we can put that into a chart and we understand, are we getting better? Are we getting worse? Are we staying the same? And a lot of times, because in the past, before we really got into no play on words here, but our bare bow project, we didn't put a lot of focus on the felt vibrations because, you know, Olympic archers throw all these stabilizers on their bows and all that absorbs all the vibration and then reduces any limb flutter that you might have. So when we started down the road of, okay, can we optimize a riser, a bare riser, to have less felt vibration, less vibration going back into the limb tips. And then we started engineering the designs of those bows to be able to have the optimum, reduce that felt vibration. And, you know, that's where the 360 dampeners come into play. When you look at all the cutouts and the outside shapes of the risers, it's not only to put the mass in the right place and put the flex in the right place, but also to make sure that the vibrations of the felt vibrations are reduced as much as we possibly can. And I get to work with a lot of great engineers. Shout out to all of those guys. Man, they are, promise you, a lot sharper than the guy you're talking to right now. And I'm, you know, very fortunate to be able to pick their brains when I get stuck on an engineering task, and they typically have the answer. So it's really good team that I get to work with at Hoyt.
Wonderful. There's a sort of a follow-up question to that as well. And it's, would the syntactic limbs be better for a smaller framed archer compared to the resin infused axial limbs?
You know, I would tend to push people with a shorter draw length to the syntactic foam because they're going to pick up a little bit more performance and speed, and in wind conditions, that's really what's going to matter. It's going to help them out a little bit in the wind. And plus, if you're looking for a little bit softer shot and smoother through the release zone, then it's definitely a better choice as well.
Gotcha. That's all we got in the comments at the moment. I don't see anything else. The only thing I wanted to get into, and if anybody posts more comments, is these guys. I kind of asked them specific to come and talk about what they're shooting, because the three of them are shooting amazing right now, and give them an opportunity to give the people just a quick glimpse of what their setups look like with the new GMX riser. So, Matt, why don't we start with you, and we'll go to Robbie, and then we'll go to John, all right?
Yep. I'm shooting the new 25 in orange, which is amazing. That color is amazing. I have 22 extra ounces added to it, and I am shooting the lower pocket weight from Ramrods in there, the tungsten powder weight. The limbs I'm shooting are 40 pound longs. Wish I would have ordered 38s. I wasn't thinking when I placed my order. So I have them turned out a bit, which I usually like them turned in as much as possible. I have them turned out, I think, I want to say 4 turns out. And they're longs, if I didn't mention that. I do love that new limb. It's amazing. And how detailed do you want me to get? Shooting 550 X10s.
It's fine. As detailed as you want to get, Matt.
You were shooting 500s, weren't you?
I was shooting 500s. Yep, I was. Yeah, 500s. My XD, I was shooting 500s with that. I was having my tuning issue was a little weird at first. I was like, well, I'm my arrows are weak, shooting the 550s, and I went to the 500s, and it just cleaned it right up, and I didn't have to make any limb adjustments. You know, with the tiller bolt at all, like it just kind of buried right in there. I think maybe a couple turns on my plunger, just when I say turns, I mean clicks on my plunger, nothing major, but everything cleaned right up. So I have that as my backup. So on the XD, I'm shooting those 500s. And then on the GMX, I am shooting the 550s. Yeah. With the plunger and a sniper drop away.
Perfect. Thanks, Matt. Robbie, how about yourself?
So I'm shooting the 25. I have the resin limbs. I have 38 longs. I'm drawing roughly probably 43 and a half right now. I had a phone call with John this morning to fix some arrow flight, so I cranked the bow up a little bit. 600 spine VAPS, 70 millimeter excess with 120 grain point. My crawl is not super deep. I have one of my tabs here. My crawl is roughly that line. I don't know if anybody can see that or not, but not a super crawl. It's relatively close to the string or to the knock point. 9 1/8 brace height, even tiller. AAE rest, biter plunger. I'm running 35 ounces on the bow. So 24 out of the main stabilizer hole, 8 on the bottom, and then the 3 ounce powder tungsten in the bottom.
Got it.
It sits good, aims really, really well, really nice on the shot. And when I do my job right, it hits the middle, but you gotta get this first.
That's so true, Robbie. I mean, you know, all of us, you know, the shooters, when I do what I'm supposed to do, it's amazing how well that bow does its job. But it's like every time I shoot something in the red, it's something I glitched. You know, it's a yippee release or whatever. I shot in a pretty windy day the other day. I didn't do super hot, but it was like, man, you do your job. That bow does is very forgiving, extremely forgiving.
When so. I set. I shot at my local archery shop, and it's hunting season here in Iowa. Like, it's getting, we're a month out or so. So everybody's coming in to shoot, and I'm outside shooting 50 meters, and I'm just like thumping tens right out of a 10 arrow. And it's probably like a 90, it's a 94 to 97, a lot out of 100. Like, you're shooting really, really well. And then you have some random bow hunter that walks out, and, you know, it's just like, how are you doing that? I'm like, I don't know, dude. I don't know. In the middle.
That's when you look at him and go, it's the bow.
It's the bow.
It's this new bow.
It's all the bow. They're just amazed to see a recurver in this part of the state. There is like a small bare bow group growing at my bow shop though. So it's really cool to see. Cause I'm shooting there and they're like, wow, that looks fun. So you get three or four that are all, they're all shooting the entry-level Hoyts.
Yeah.
We got them entry-level Hoyts, and they're all just shooting and having a good time. So.
That's funny, Robbie. That's the way it happens, though. That's exactly how Barebow's gotten to where it's at, is, you know, little pockets happen, and then it just turns into a big thing. Mm-hmm. John, I know you got some, you know, you're limited time behind the bow, but very good quality time today. Where are you at right now with your setup? going whatever details you want to.
So I was going, like, leading up to this, I was going to go super light, the light mass, lightweight, just to get through this upcoming week. But things progressed pretty good, and I got a back brace. I've been shooting with a back brace on, so I tested that out yesterday a little bit, and no issues. Went out and cranked up the poundage today, no issues for a couple practice sessions. So I said, screw it, man, we're going all out. We're gonna go back to what my XD setup was, about 42 pounds on the fingers, 550 x10s, 110 grain points. So I knew that bow was gonna tune, so I haven't set that up yet. I actually have it right here. Before the Zoom, I was actually putting everything back on it for my backup bow, because I set up the GMX 25, the GMX 3 this afternoon and started shooting that. I got that up to about the same poundage I had the XD at, about 42, 42 and a half pounds. Just grabbed my X10 550s, 110 grain points, and shot them, and it shot well, like really well. So, you know, it was only one day, so I got to give it another day to make sure no contact's going to show up. But if it does, I know how to fix it. Been down that road plenty of times. So right now it's the GMX, my purple, riser, which is, I think all the new, the Hoyt Cerakote stuff is pretty, it's pretty awesome. It's like, it's purple, but it, you kind of rotate it a little bit and it's kind of like shimmers and stuff. So it's got like a, almost like flakes or something in it, but it's pretty fire. I don't know. Maddie's probably looks a little nicer, that orange, but the purple's pretty nice. But I got that set up with the foam 40 pound. I was going to set that up on my 27, but I don't have the arrows that are proper fit for it right now. So I just grabbed the 40 and put it on the GMX and backed the tiller bolts off two turns. So I'm right around that 42 pound mark, 42 and a half. So they're both the GMX 3 and the XD are going to be set up pretty much identical, except for the weight distribution. I have two, like I would say right around 20 ounce disc weights on the GMX 3, one in the middle hole and one in the bottom hole. The XD will have this one on there. This one's like a 36 ouncer. And then I'm going to have like a 1 pound kicker in the back. Biter plungers, AAE Freestyle Elite, rest, XS 60s on the, yeah, 60 highs on the X10s, Biter Knox.
Beautiful. So for all of you, some of the stuff is sort of standard issue, even carrying it over to the current setup. But it's pretty cool to hear that you can go right from the XD, boom, GMX, and it's like, it's just better, but it carries right over. So are you,
I don't know if it's better or worse, but they tune like really similar. The 25 to 25, the 27 tuned a little bit different for me, but the 25 to 25 is, it's set up pretty easy. Yeah.
Are you all carrying the XD as a backup? Do we know which one the primary bell is going to be right now?
Yeah,
definitely.
Yeah, next primary.
XD's the backup, and I mean, I'm 100% confident I could step up with either one, make a good shot, and it'll hit a 10.
Love it, love it.
Hey, if I could, I want to throw out, whether the world believes or not, when I send a new bow out to any shooters, they are not mandated to shoot that. I hope they do. I hope it works out, but all these guys are shooting the new GMX because it works good for them. And if it didn't, man, I would not want them to shoot it. So I'm excited that it's working out as well as it has.
If it didn't, I'd be shooting the Epic or the XD.
I know you would.
All right. With that being said, we're going to just hammer through some questions in the comments. Doug, you can handle them however you see fit, and then we'll probably shut her down. So Hector says, with recent heat waves lately, have there been any tests on the performance of the synthetic foam in comparison to the resin infused?
100%. Matter of fact, today I was flinging some arrows trying to get ready for the nationals, and please, no one ever look at my score that I shoot with a sight. It is quite embarrassing. I suck a lot, but that's me, not the equipment. So here in Salt Lake today, we had a 90 degree day, and I get to practice at the Easton Foundation Center, and they actually have AstroTurf down. So that AstroTurf gets ridiculously hot. And that's honestly where I do a lot of my real world testing, because I can do all the testing in the lab again. That's the lab, right? I want to get out there and actually fling some arrows. You know, call it a mid-level tier archer, not an elite archer by any stretch of the imagination. So when I make a mistake, I can see it. And I want to see the difference between what the heat really does to the limbs. So full disclosure, heat will affect every single recurve limb on the market, regardless of the manufacturer. I don't care who they are. And if they say it doesn't, they're not being honest with you. It's just like anything that gets hot, it can change its properties. Now, that doesn't mean it's going to delaminate. It doesn't mean it's going to not perform at the optimum level. But the other thing that you need to be mindful of too, as recurve archers, is the limb changes, but guess what? Our strings change a heck of a lot more than our limbs do. And that's something that people never talk about. So be sure to maintain your brace height and your tiller. You'll see a shift in your tiller on a recurve during a hot day before you see it in your brace height. So if you see a shift in your tiller, be sure to put a twist or two in your string to get your brace height where it's where it needs to be, because that's what's really happening. But the limbs, all limbs are affected by heat. The resin infused core, aka the wood core, resin infused core, and the syntactic foam cores. What ends up happening when a laminate gets warm or hot, it does change its characteristics slightly, but it's not to the level that it affects the grouping if you maintain your brace height and you're maintaining your string. And the reason I say that, we look at archers that are at the Olympic level and shooting 70 meters, you don't see them changing their bows when it gets hot. You don't see them throwing their bows in the shade when it gets hot, but they're still shooting world record class scores. It's because the equipment is consistent. Now, what I would recommend for everyone is when you get a brand new set of limbs from any manufacturer, I don't care who it is, when you get a brand new set of limbs, please shoot them for 300 shots. Get them broke in, because when you string up a brand new set of limbs and you shoot 100 shots to 300 shots, they have a slight break-in period and they will normalize and stabilize. And I think that's important. Manufacturers don't talk about it. I don't hear a lot of archers talking about it, but it is important. Today, it was, like I said, a 90-degree day. I have measured the temperature on that field during a 90-degree day, and it's somewhere around 130 to 140 degrees is what that AstroTurf gets to. So it gets really hot. And I was really being mindful of my brace height on the my bows today, because I was playing around with some long limbs and some medium limbs. I haven't really made up my mind what I'm going to shoot at Nationals. I think I will equally suck at both of them. It won't matter. But I did. So the most I saw shift in my strings was a 32nd of an inch in the brace height. Now, what that means is it shifted my tiller. Guaranteed, but it does it equally. Okay, so put a couple twists in the string, get the brace height back to where you want to be at, or where you tuned at, is really critical. So yes, heat affects all limbs, doesn't matter who they are. Be mindful of your string, because the string is going to change more than your limbs, and the limbs will stay very consistent. I would recommend tuning your bow after around 200 to 300 shots. And then it should really find a really good sweet spot and stabilize, and you won't have any issues. Hope that answers that question.
I believe
it. Can I pile on that one?
Yeah, absolutely.
Real world testing. I totally agree with Doug on that one. I don't live in a very hot environment, and usually the first day I do shoot in a hot environment, or like say I have like a day that's coming up where it's 85 and sunny. Most people won't do this, but I'll leave my bow outside and I'll leave it like in my shooting station. I'll shoot in the morning and then I'll let it get hot and then I'll go out and shoot. And then the only times I ever have any difference in impact downrange is because my string changed. And just like Doug, if you pay attention to that, I have really had no impact. That Frank, you and I had this discussion. You asked me a few days ago. My string changes. If my string doesn't change, everything is, you know, the same. Whether it's hot or cold, it seems to shoot really close to the same. And it's usually that first real hot day is where, I mean, I got a string stretcher. I could stretch it all I want, but it seems like that first time that gets super hot out and like maybe squeezes the wax out a little bit more because this wax gets super soft. Yeah. That's when the last change I need to make the entire time with my string.
Perfect. Thanks for all that insight, John. I don't think you've ever said that on the podcast before. So that's good stuff. It's new stuff. If we're good with that one, Rob asked if there has ever been or will Hoyt publish draw weight curves?
So we are working on, yes, I don't know if we've ever published them for recurve, but we're working on what we call an engineering white paper. So it's a bunch of technical stuff that we're putting out with some technical information on the resin infused core and the syntactic foam core limb. Does have draw force curves on there. It's the paper's done. I worked with our marketing team to get that done this week. I don't know when they're going to release it, to be honest. That's okay. Marketing is going to put, I guess, probably what marketing does, but from the engineering side, if we call it a white paper because it's just black text on white paper and we're putting down the information. So that will be released here in the near future.
Okay. And then Cindy has a question. It's just what strings you recommend for the syntactic limb. Maybe it's just easy enough to say, what are you guys shooting? And what, you know, will you make a change if you're shooting the syntactic limb? Like, John, I know you're not right now. I know.
I'm shooting the syntactic right now.
Oh, that's right. You are.
I'm shooting both. I'm shooting both.
What strings? Did you do anything different? Are you just making your standard string?
For me, 6BCY, 652.
Just a reminder, John makes his own strings.
It's and 652 is
fast flight.
It's essentially D97.
It is old school original fast flight. That's what it is. Fast flight. The reason BCY can't call it fast flight is because Brownell patent or trademarked the name fast flight. But it is the original formulation of fast flight material.
And our two other guests here, Robbie and Matt, both shoot for supporter of the Barrel Project gas bowstrings. What do you guys have going on with your setups?
I shoot 8125 with 25 thousandths power grip center serving. I do the power grip because it's less slick, so my crawls won't shift when I'm, you know, transitioning into the draw. And something that John pointed out when I first started my first year was that there's wax on like your normal center serving halo. There's wax on it, so the sun kind of messes with that a little bit more when we're looking at it, because we look at serving the entirety of the time. Olympic shooters, generally the center serving isn't long enough to get up to their eye.
Correct.
But for us, we always have to look at it. So for us, that makes a difference. I believe it's 18 strand. I'm not 100%. It's either 18 or 16.
Mine's 16. You must have gotten a 16. Mine's a 16 as well. 8125, 16, 0.025 on the power grip.
Yeah. And I kind of have like a standard build with gas. I know like a couple other barebow shooters that wanted to shoot gas bowstrings asked like, what should I ask for? I just tell them to do whatever Robbie does, because I make the center serving go up. So it's definitely above my eye, because I don't want to be called a cheater. Else on this podcast. And I make sure the center serving goes nice and low down. So even on deepest crawl, I'm still covered. I'm not going to wear out the string.
Gotcha. Thanks, Robbie. Matt, same boat.
Same thing. 8125. Yeah. On my XD, I have a string that I made. It's a 652. I bought a spool of 652 a few years ago, and I made up a string that I shot on my Exceed. And I still use that string. I still love it. It's a great string, and it's not frayed at all. And 652, it's really quiet. I don't know the science behind the strings, but I really do like that 652 stuff. And then years ago, Doug told me that, you know, Doug tipped me off to the 8125G. I don't know what the G was, but if it's the same, I don't know if it's the same product anymore or whatever, but I've been using that 8125 since.
Got it.
But
yeah, if I could comment on some of the string stuff real quick. Yeah,
absolutely.
So at the, so when we do a new design of a riser, we have to put it through a dry fire test. And how we dry fire the structural integrity of the riser is we'll pull it back to 30 inches and let the string grow full on dry fire. But we use 65 pound long limbs bottomed out. So we're getting around 75 plus pounds when we're dumping this energy into the riser. And it has to pass 2,000 full-on dry fires without any you know, cracking, any flexing, any bending.
Any warping?
What? I'm sorry?
Any warping.
Any warping.
So anyway, my point with this is years ago, and this has probably been a decade, so 10 years ago at least, Hoyt was transitioning to everything in our factory needed to be BCYX material, because that's what compounds use. And they didn't want to have a chance of our team members, you know, mixing up the string material and everything. So prior to that, we were using there's a couple of materials that I think are really good for recurves. But when we test it with a string material that's engineered for compound, which means no stretch, no creep, we went through 50 pairs of recurve limbs to get to a 2000 dry fire, because they will break. They eventually will break. You're pounding the limb. When we use BCY 652, which is what we use internally at Hoyt now, we'll go through 10 sets to 15 sets compared to 50 sets. Wow. So what that really means is make sure that for your recurves, you're using a string material that has some dynamic flex to it. 8125, BCY 652, Angel Majesty has some dynamic flex. Dynamic flexes helps reduce the stress on the actual limb tip and actually helps the limbs increase their life. But also, I think the dynamics flex of the recurve string actually helps the bow to be softer and more forgiving as well. So keep that in mind when you're looking at, you know, recurve string materials.
Thanks for that. Appreciate your input. Well above and beyond the Hoyt discussion, Doug. That's pretty much where we're at. We got all the questions in the live feed answered. We covered everything we needed to cover. Doug, thank you so much for your time and your willingness to just really give Barebow an opportunity to put some details into a product and put it on the market. And so far, these guys, the way they're shooting, and it's working, and it's working well. And we appreciate your support, especially these gentlemen right here who are shooting. So thank you so much for everything you've done for Barebow and everyone in general. Okay.
Well, absolutely. And thank everyone, you know, and the support y'all given me and the information, and wouldn't be here without you guys.
Awesome. All right. You guys hang out for a second. I'm going to kill the live feed and we're going to kind of close things out. Everybody on the live feed, thank you so much for tuning in.
Yeah, thank you, everyone. Appreciate it.
Let me make sure this live feed is actually dead. Takes a little while sometimes. There it goes. You know the warped story, right? Or no?
Warped tour.
What's that?
Warped tour.
Warped tour.
Warped tour.
So the specific person in a traditional archery group that we all
love dearly. Love,
loosely tolerate. And there was a comment about Hoyt producing warped risers, and pretty much everybody just like shot it down. But it was it's been an ongoing joke about Hoyt producing warped risers. And yeah, Matt may have been thrown into it a little bit. Matt was like, whatever,
but a joke.
It's just a joke. That's why that was a little inside joke that I didn't know if you heard or not, but
we should have brought that up. Well, that would have been good.
Yeah, I mean, but it's not like it went far. It's not like it's a, you know what I mean? The guy doesn't have any reach. It's not a big deal.
It is funny though, when new product comes out, there's always those people that just, it don't matter who it is. If it's not what they're shooting, they will just make shit up.
Literally. True. Like, John and I were going back and forth with a couple people, and like I was sharing all the stuff to the Bearable Project and really promoting it. And then all of a sudden, you know, you're getting a couple people across the pond or like, oh, it's nice to see that Hoyt just produced another Olympic riser. There's nothing. And then it's, oh, there's nothing Bearable related on it. Just another riser, you know? And we're like, but you don't know. You don't know any details whatsoever. You just jump to conclusions and, you know, cleaned it all up. And it wasn't anything major. It's just, you know, it's what happens on social media, I suppose, these days. But
yeah. Well, when the top three spots on the podium, we're going to figure out how much of an Olympic riser this thing is.
We'll see.
That better happen, gentlemen. That better happen. I know you all have it in you for sure. So can't wait to watch it on Saturday. All right. You guys have a wonderful night. Thanks so much for joining us, Doug. Once again, thanks for all you've done for
thank everybody. You, Doug.
Good yeah, man, thank buddy. All y'all. I appreciate it.
Take care. Have a good night, guys.
Bye.
See you guys.